listening to the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Buddy Tipton. How you doing, Buddy Tipton?
Fantastic. Everything's good.
Buddy Tipton was a pastor in Vero Beach, Florida for how many years?
46.
46 years at the Assembly of God. Let's go back. Where are you originally from, buddy?
Panama City, Florida.
Now, there was a dark period in his life. I know that, dark period in your life, where it led to you becoming a pastor later on in life. So let's go back to your childhood. You were brought up in upstate Florida.
Yeah, in the panhandle there, you know, it was kind of redneck area, you know, so that's why the accent that I have. I don't sound like I'm from New York, do I?
Well, you always refer to yourself as the redneck preacher.
Right, yeah. That's because everybody else did.
Yeah, well, it was great to have you here. And so tell us, what'd your dad do for a living? What'd your mom do?
My dad and mother both worked in the shipyard during the war. You know, because they were both welders. Oh. And they stayed right there in Panama City. And my dad became a carpenter, and my mother was a housewife. And so my dad built houses and worked his way up to becoming a contractor. And
okay, so you were a typical young boy, liked to go fishing, lived up in Panama. Mm-hmm. What happens next?
Well, we also hunted. You know, in Panama City, you know, whenever you're in the second grade, they give you a rifle, a .22 rifle. You know, no instructions, just here's a rifle, you know, it's your birthday. And we're very dangerous, you know, and so we had a lot of close calls. But when I was 16, my cousin and I, you know, were going hunting, and a bird flew up in a grapevine, you know, and my mother was going to take us somewhere and drop us off. But at the house, I loaded my 16-gauge shotgun to shoot this bird, and he flew off, and so I leaned it against the car. And a few minutes later, my cousin picked up his gun and aimed it at me and said, "Let's duel." We did that stupid stuff, you know,
yeah.
And we weren't thinking of any danger. I picked mine up and aimed it at him, and he must have realized it was loaded, and he put his hand out and went right through his hand and right through his heart, and he fell down right in front of me dead. I mean, blood came out of his mouth, and he said, "God have mercy," and that was it. And I was stunned. I mean, I just... that was the hardest thing, looking back over my life. I'm 78 now. There's nothing ever been like that. You know, the hardest thing I've ever done was go through that. Because I felt guilty. I felt like, you know, that I should die. And, you know, and so I started drinking. You know, I was in high school. And I started drinking. And as long as I was drinking, I felt a little bit better.
Dull the pain.
Yeah, it didn't go away, but I felt a little bit better. It was numbing it, you know, so to speak, a little anesthetic, you know. And so, of course, with drinking, you know, other problems come. And I graduated high school, but then I started getting in trouble. And I got in a little trouble, and I was having car wrecks and speeding tickets and all that sort of thing. So the judge said, you know, if you'll join the military, I won't take your license. And I said, okay, all right. Well, I wish I could take that back, but I joined the Navy and went overseas. I was over in Japan and, you know, here and there.
Was that a good experience in any way? I mean, did you glean some discipline from that?
Well, no. It was good in a way until an officer said something to me and I had to hit him, you know. And they escorted me out of the military.
Were you under the influence?
Oh, yeah. I was drunk as a skunk. That's under it.
Yeah,
and, you know, we was off base. And so, you know, I had to go before, a court.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was young. I was 19 years old. And I couldn't afford to get an attorney. I could have, but I didn't even know all that.
Yeah.
And so they gave me a bad conduct discharge from the military. And so that was when Vietnam, I mean, the night they took me off the ship, I was in Yokosuka, Japan, and was in a destroyer. And when they took me off of that ship, they loaded ammunition all night to go on Taiwan patrol. That was when Vietnam was cranking up.
Mm.
And that's how I missed Vietnam. You know, at the time, I wanted to go. You know, looking back, you know, I'm glad I didn't go.
You probably wanted to funnel that anger towards some enemy that you created in your mind.
Well, it was just because I wanted to do something for our country, you know. And probably on the subliminally, that probably is true, you know, that I wanted to go and fight and so forth. And so, you know, that was a bad experience. But, you know, if we get to that, the end result was really good.
Okay, so you've got two things now. You inadvertently, accidentally murder, kill your cousin.
Yeah, let's don't use the word murder.
Yeah, you've got that on your back.
Yeah.
At this time, you don't know Jesus as your Lord and Savior to take that sin off your shoulders.
Right.
Then you get, because of that, you're drinking heavily, and you get booted out of the Navy. At this time, would you say you were fully addicted to alcohol?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Could not stop, of your own accord.
I could quit for about an hour. You know?
Yeah.
I'd quit 4 or 5 times a day. Let's start back. We joked about that was the truth, though. You know, you get up in the morning and say, I'm going to have a hangover, but not today. You take another drink. You know?
Well, I've been there. I couldn't stop, but I've done 11 and a half years sober, but I can't do 3 days on my own. It's only by the power of God.
Right, right. Exactly.
So what happens next? You said that the Navy somehow was a good thing that you got booted out.
Well, it wasn't a good thing I got booted out, but the end result was, years later, when I was pastoring a church, a lady in the church, Sharon Schrader, which was Bill Schrader's wife, they used to own Action Printers years ago, and she said, you know, we ought to try to get this thing reversed. I think it was bad conduct discharge. So she went to work on it and got my wife Mavis involved in it. And they eventually got the senator involved in it and got it done with an honorable discharge.
Isn't that great? Because of your clean record later on in life.
Well, they had all kind of things out of the newspaper, things that we'd done at the church, and said, you know, and she said, even murderers sometimes get, you know, a reprieve. And so I think he deserves a chance. And so on a July 4th weekend, they gave me that.
Wow. Yeah.
It was very emotional. It still is.
It's very powerful to be forgiven, to be exonerated.
Yeah.
Isn't that exactly what Jesus does for us, too? I guess one day the judge is going to say, Palmer, you're guilty. And then Jesus is going to stand up in the back of the room going, excuse me,
your
I already
honor.
Paid the price for this one.
Excuse me, Your Honor, but I'm his attorney, and he's not guilty. I paid it. I paid his bail.
Would you say this whole experience, though, made it easier for you to show mercy and kindness to those who fall in life and have entered over 40 years have entered the doors of your church?
Absolutely. You know, there's a parable in the Bible about that where this guy was forgiven this humongous debt. And so he goes to a guy that owed him something. It wasn't even that much money. And he said, give it to me or you're going to prison. You know, and then he got back to Jesus, you know. And he says, you know, that's it with you. Because, you know, you were forgiven a big debt and you didn't have mercy. And, you know, and that probably is true. I mean, I have mercy on a lot of people because I've been there and done that, you know, and I've been forgiven.
Okay, let's find out how that all happened. So you get booted out of the Navy, you're drinking, you're addicted to alcohol, you're carrying the weight of the death of your cousin, the accidental shooting, and what happens finally? I mean, were you already with Mavis, and were you still addicted to booze?
No, I was, of course, got out in California, you know, in San Francisco, and I had an uncle that managed a pizza place down in Santa Barbara, California. And so I went down there and worked with him. Well, it was a pizza place that had beer, 27 types of imported beer plus tap beer. And so the first night I worked, I had 14 beers. I said, this is my kind of place. And so my uncle, he was a drinker too. So we had a great time, you know, together. And
beer and pizza go well together.
Uh-huh. So I met a girl, moved in with her, and she got pregnant. Mm. And I said, oh, boy, I said, I can't get married, you know, And like everything else in life, I left her and just left. But I'd met Mavis, and I wasn't ready to get married, you know, but I didn't want to lose her. Mm-hmm. And so eventually we did get married. Mm-hmm. And because things weren't working out there, I was still having trouble with the drinking. She thought she could fix me, you know.
Women tend to take us on as projects, don't they?
They do. They do. And that project wasn't doing too well. It was no more subsidizing that one, you know. So anyway, I said, well, if we move back to Florida, maybe things will change.
Mm.
They did. They got worse.
Geographic change. Huh?
Yeah, right.
That's going to cure it.
All right. Went back to Florida and Panama City, and I met some of my old friends. Mm-hmm. And here we will. You know, we started drinking again, and then I was running around with guys that got 20 years because they killed a guy. You know, they were riding by his house too fast, and he yelled at them. And his whole family was out there, and they jumped over the fence and stabbed him to death. And they all got 20 years for that. I could have been with them, you know, because we were buddies, and I just happened to not be with them that day.
Wow.
And so, yeah. So, you know, that I went right back to my drinking and so forth, and finally my wife, we'd done this many times, about talking about divorce, and finally she said, this is it, I can't take it any longer. And I said, well, I understand, you know, I understand that, but I'll try one more time. And talked her into it, as I always did. But she was serious, and I knew she meant it this time. And so I quit, you know, for about, maybe a month. And one day, I was a Boilermaker, so I was blowing the union. So we always had work, but all of a sudden, we didn't have work. And so I told her I was going out to look for a job, and so I went out and went to the first bar, you know, drank a beer, played a game of pool, went to the next, took a beer and went with the next bar. I said, rack them up, and set the beer on the table, and the door opened and my wife walked in.
Ooh.
I said, yeah, I was on my way out right now. And so I left that beer sitting there. It's the last one I ever touched. Mm. And I actually never touched it, you know, and I walked out, and then I quit for a few more weeks, and that's when I went to church on a Sunday for some reason. You know, I don't know why I was going, you know, but I just said, I'm going to church Sunday, you know,
Your wife went with you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And my whole family, my parents, when the accident happened, my parents got saved. You know, they came to church and got saved. And I left the church because me and my cousin that I killed, well, he was in church because his mother was a single parent, you know, and she had six kids. And so he had to go to church, and so I'd go with him sometimes. We just sit there and snicker and laugh, and you know, as you know, 14, 15 year olds, you know, and so I kind of caught some of what they were saying, you know. Mm. We'd get saved about every Sunday, you know. We go back outside, and it was totally different.
Saved every Sunday.
Yeah, it'd make you feel good. You know, you can leave here and you can get in a car wreck and go straight to hell, and I'd say, oh my God, we need to get saved. But it wasn't really sticking, you know, and so. That day I went to church. I said, I'll get it over with, and I'll never say I'm going to church again. And they took us right down to the front, you know, of course, and the place was full. And I said, I'm looking for the exit, you know, I can get out of here real quick, you know. And I knew how the system works, you know. They sing a few songs, you know, and a special song maybe, an offering, you know.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer, and this is a new day.
We'd like to thank Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie for sponsoring It's a New Day. We'd also like to thank Center for Advanced Eye Care, Dr. Mallon, Center for Advanced Eye Care with offices in Fort Pierce and in Vero Beach. Thank you for supporting us.
There's a city, just
Tribute Quartet from Nashville, Tennessee is going to be at Sunrise Tabernacle Church in Fort Pierce, 3280 South 25th Street on November 22nd. Doors open at 5, concert starts at 6. Tribute Quartet from Nashville, one of Southern Gospel Music's finest Southern Gospel quartets in the nation. Come out and be a part. Sunrise Tabernacle Church, an evening with Tribute Quartet, November 22nd, 6 p.m. Doors open at 5. Come out and be a part of what God's doing. We want to see you there. Telephone number 772-828-0316.
The cloud.